Welcome back, listeners. On this episode, I spoke to the editor of Flea. Flea started out its journey at Sundance, where it won the Grand Jury Prize in World Cinema Documentary. In the past few weeks, it has picked up prizes at the New York Film Critics Circle, the National Board of Review, the Gothams, and many more. It is looking to strike big at the Oscars with potential nominations in Best Documentary, Best International Feature, and Best Animated Feature. I wanted to get started and just ask really where, how were you first approached for this project?
Well, first of all, I knew Jonas, the director, many years before that. I was a consultant. I consulted his student films when he finished film school. It's not the Danish film school. It's not the National Danish Film School. It's alternative film school actually has grown up to be something very big. And it's called Super 16, which actually was started by a lot of people who actually didn't get into the Danish film school and then, you know, started up their own. And works fantastic. So anyway, I knew Jonas there, and he did a couple of films after that, and I was just a consultant. You know, the way that we do quite a lot in Denmark is that you're coming in, giving your opinion while you're still in the editing process, and then discussing what is kind of trouble do we have in the film, what kind of solutions can you come up with, and discuss what do you really reveal anything or reveal the inner life of the director, what he or she really wants with the film? So Jonas and I knew each other from early on. It's, you know, a meeting of the young and the old tradition. You know, I'm the old one there, you know, with 50 years of experience. Literally 50 years of experience. So it is that complex combination that I myself is very, very grateful that I have, you know, that the young people would like to, you know, play with me. That keeps me young, I think, at least. But I mean, it goes with Thomas Vinterberg as well. I just have to say, with Thomas Vinterberg, the different films that we did there, I work very closely with another partner in crime, so to speak, a younger editor, Anne Bistow, who is a very talented. And so we are actually going and doing films together. And that's a fantastic thing. I've done that over the last 15 years or something like that. So I came in when Jonas had for a couple of years, you know, been talking with Amin, and from those talks and the layout of what a script could be, Jonas and I, you know, had a 2 or 3 weeks of a workshop just with the final getting into the script and the understanding what is the book. The film, where would it start, where would it end, what is it that we need to find. That time they had started slowly getting into some of the situations, which was actually filmed, you know, that Jonas has followed with the actual Amin, and they had started to somehow storyboard it and see where it would go. Just animatic, you know, very simple, black and white, you know, look right, look left, look straight on. And so we had a little idea about how these, some of the locations, you know, some of the locations in Kabul could look like. Then Jonas went back, I think, for almost half a year or something like that, you know, had further conversations and with his best friend Amin, and then we came back into the editing the animatic has been a little further on, but then actually the really editing started. Somebody called it an animated documentary film. I like to put it the other way around, say that it's a documentary which is animated, because for me it is the documentary part of it, which is the where actually the story starts. It is something that is really happening, and on top of that, and in order to create and develop it, we animated it. So it's the documentary is something which is the most important thing for me. So actually we had 6 or 7 months in the editing where it was only the animatic that we worked with and the actual building up the story and editing the intimate conversations with Jonas. And so those two things over the half a year of stuff like that went hand in hand. So you would, you know, having certain lines that you would like to know, say that this was actually a scene that could be acted out, so to speak, in animation. And Jonas would just, you know, make all the additional lines from, you know, the human trafficker, you know, he would just say the lines that we expect that we will need, you know. And so it was, anyway, it was a quite poor thing to begin with. But because it was an animation and animated, then you have a very strict budget. I mean, when you deliver the final animatic and therefore the whole story of the film, it has to be exact the length that we can afford to do. Mm-hmm. So before that, they went into actual 2D fully colored animation. We had the whole film laid out there. So you can say that the actual animation, so you can say that the actual editing took place before the animation, the Foley animation. Then of course, in the end, when the Foley animation and the film was there, we met and had 2 or 3 weeks where we just, you know, adjust a little bit. But when you do animation film, at least in this, but the budget that we have, you cannot afford just to say that, oh, we'll just over animate it and then in the editing we will figure out how the rhythm is. You have to figure out the rhythm right from the beginning, because you know, 1 minute of animation costs a certain amount of money, and you cannot do that. That's not in our budget. That's not possible. You can say that the film has 3 different kinds of budgets. You know, it has the fully 2D color animated part of it, and then it had the black and white, which is a more dangerous, scary part of it, you know, which is a simpler form of animation. And then you have the archive material, which it has a lower budget, and the black and white has a little more costful, and the fully black and white, fully colored 2D animation has the biggest graphic cassette. So when they got there to the time when we had the story totally complete in the animatic storyboard, then I think it took them a year or something like that for the Foley animation. And I went in, you know, occasionally just to discuss, you know, the framing or the color, but not much. My biggest problem was actually getting the animatic up to. And during the editing, we discovered new things, and we also found that there was an interesting psychological development that we had Jonas to go back again and have new conversations with a man. And then that was implemented into the film. And then again, he had to go back again, because that was new information that we got. For instance, when they in the ocean of this ship, when, you know, the engine stops and they cannot get anywhere, and they are not picked up by the Norwegian ferry, but taking back again. And then they end up there for 6 months, I think, in this very tragic, poor conditions in this house. Then we started to search for if there were some archive material from that particular time, where they ended up. And during the editing, we found that they actually, there was some footage from there. Mm-hmm. And again, Jonas showed those footage to Amin, and Amin, you know, could point it out different people that he actually knew from his period of time being there. And so that went into the story and needed more words and more comments from Amin. So there was new conversations between Jonas and him at that point.
Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, where were you getting this archival footage? Was it easy to obtain? Was it hard to obtain?
You know, all archive, looking for archive, you start at the internet. And you just search there and see whatever. But at the same time, we had the people there who was only dealing with collecting archive material from Kabul in the 80s, have archive material from that particular time in Moscow, and later and also that particular time in Denmark. And we had a lot of different things that was coming in, you know, it was actually a lot, but from which we could choose. And also telling the story of the fall of Kabul, you know, all the different kinds of news anchorman talking about the very classic normal way of storytelling, but very effective here. So there was a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. Also, actually, the fight in Kabul around the area where that they had to flee, we had different kinds, and there was, you know, this discussion of really how much blood and situations can you actually show, and it was very important for Jonas, the director, to say that this is really a difficult time. It's not just for the you know, that it was fighting, but also that actually, you know, people was hurt and actually dying, and it was in a poor conditions.
Mm-hmm. And so, is there anything that you learned that was new to you during this process?
New to me in
regards to the story.
I don't think that I don't know exactly how to answer that question, but one thing that I can say is that dealing with documentary, I do fiction films and documentaries. I switch back and forth. I really like that combination because of when you're dealing with a fiction film, you can do whatever you want to the characters. I mean, you can kill them, or you can cut them out, or you can make the audience love them or hate them. Or I mean, it's no, they are not in a position of saying no, don't do this to me. But if you're doing documentary, you have a moral responsibility to the people that you are filming and that you're actually bringing in to the film, and you have a moral responsibility in Flea towards Amin, of course. So you have to, and that's much more difficult. When you're getting into a documentary film, you don't really have a script, even though that we laid it out, you know, early on, before we actually getting into the editing process. But you don't really know where it goes to. You don't really know where it's going to end. Mm-hmm. And the difficult thing, you can say, in this film was actually to end the film, to get to that particular, exactly that part where you were talking about, when they actually get into the house and are reunited and build a future. We had that scene, and because that's actually pretty much animated on top of real footage. But we didn't exactly know how to get there. There was a certain development that was needed to be addressed from Amin. Because you see, you can look at Flea on two different levels. It's one level as a grown-up man lying on the couch and start telling his childhood story. And he tells a childhood story, and we get into the childhood teens, and the fleeing, the terrible thing, the dreams that is coming, the dreams of where to go and a different life and all the struggles, and then coming to Copenhagen. And having that grown up lying on the couch, telling that story, do something to that grown up Amin. That is to say that that process, the years of talk with Jonas, make Amin understand his own life and process, human process, in a completely different way. You know, he learned something by telling the story. And you can say that the childhood fleeing story, getting into the teens and actually coming to Copenhagen, has a climax when he is accepted by the family, the hidden family, or the not hidden, the secret family in Stockholm, when they actually accept him as homosexual and actually, so to speak, literally open the door into this fantastic club, and where it's full of life, full of energy and love. That is the climax of that story. I mean, that is where Amin, you know, can be the person that the young Amin can be, the person that he is longing for. Mm-hmm. But the grown up lying on the couch, telling that story, still all this needs to reflect on him. And what it does is that he, when he's still lying on the couch, has his trouble of not knowing where to go. I mean, he has his boyfriend, but at the same time that he cannot really commit himself to him. At the same time, he has the burden on his shoulder of living up to the expectations from the family. The family has spent so much money to have him as the only one who can go to Copenhagen and have the education, because he has the right age for it. If it was the other brother, the big brother, then he would not be having the right age to actually enter the Danish school system and go to university. So there was a lot of burden on and Amin there, you know, that he has to be successful in respect for the for his siblings. Mm-hmm. So we needed Amin to reflect on this last part. Where would it actually take him in order to make that he has turned the back to the boyfriend and had to come back and actually. So what was that period of time? So Jonas had to go back, you know, again, and talking specific about that period of time with Amin. And there's part in the story in the animation which is built on actually filming. You know, they look at the house for the very first time. They're sitting in the car and having the dialogue of whether they can move in here or not. And other parts. So we also had the story actually filmed when they enter the new house. We knew that that was the ending of the film, but from the actual climax of the young Amin into the gay club and getting to the situation where the grown-up Amin accept and take the responsibility of engaging with his boyfriend. We needed him to reflect on that. Mm-hmm. So we knew that Jonas had been filming some part in New York. So it was New York existed in the storytelling, but that particular shooting there was not that deep in thoughts. So we invented the conversation in New York based on the late conversation between Amin and Jonas, the director. And based on that, we made him go to New York. And therefore, we also need him to come back to Copenhagen. And there we invented the scene in the airport, you know, the first time as a child, not a child, as a teen, when he arrived to Copenhagen, he has this false passport and he had to tear it apart. So it was just an idea, you know, having that he now as a grown up coming back from New York to Copenhagen, he has the Danish legitimate passport.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's a Danish citizen. And he could just, you know, have that and all the doors are open. It's a completely different way of getting back. And that makes him reflect on what it does to a person when he has to flee in that early age, when you don't lose trust in people. Trust in people that the same way that he lost trust in being capable of getting into organization with his boyfriend. So it was right there for us, you know, to animate that he was coming out of the out from the airport into the into the public area of the airport, and there suddenly his boyfriend stands there and he is confronted with that and has to make a decision, and that's where he says that something new has to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was the most difficult thing to get, but that the problem with any documentary that you do, how do you act? You use In a documentary film, in the editing of the documentary film, you use 90-95% of the time trying to figure out where is actually the ending of this story. What is actually the conclusion of this? The conclusion can be in words, it can be in a specific conversation, it can be an image. Where is it? Where are we actually taking it? And quite often you get it in a very late situation. You can say, as I said before, we had the actually ending in the footage, and also, you know, that it would be live in the very last one, but we didn't exactly know how to get there.
Mm-hmm.
Long story.
What? Oh yeah, no.
It was just a long story.
No, I love it. I love that you sort of threaded that whole line throughout. So. No, that's fantastic. And I mean, obviously this film has sort of taken on a life of its own and it's resonating all across, I mean, in the United States very well. And I'm wondering why that is, or why you think that is.
Human. It's a human story. I mean, you could say that it's I think it's, let me try to answer that. There's something in the storytelling which is very simple. The build up, the individual scene, it's something which is very important for me in storytelling, that is simplicity. It's very simple. It's not a lot of action. Even the action scenes, like in the wood when they are, you know, the trafficker there, it's told in a slow piece, a slow pace, but not really, you know, progressing and be aggressive or in any way. We are not making any fantastic scenes that you know should just by the images taking the breath out of the audience. It's not that kind of way. It is the understanding of how is the inner character really reflecting on the things. I have to tell you one thing, which was quite interesting, because when we were doing the animation, animatics storyboard, black and white, very poor, no really big thing is really happening. And we had different screenings for people in order to figure out how do people react to it, how do will the audience react to it. And in that early stage of animation, we realized, you know, that people was moved. And I think that a lot of things had to do with that it is hidden in the voice, in Amin's voice, basic Amin's voice, the way that he reflects on the things. And because that you can hear, it has a tone, it's real, there's no doubt about it. It's not actors in that sense, it's real people. And when we showed it there, and these poor black and white animatic, and people was moved there, I really got scared. I got very scared, because I thought, you know, oh my goodness, if the audience are ready to be moved with these very poor black and white animatic, what will happen when it's totally fully 2D color animated and fantastic looking? Will the magic disappear? You know, is it so that suddenly this the black and white, you know, was opening up the fantasy for the or the inner life for the audience, because they would put so many emotions into black and white? Would that disappear when it suddenly would be in fully color animated? But luckily, it did not. We were very careful. I was very careful, you know, when we were looking at the fully 2D animation, you know, that it still had that magic in it. I can try not to turn the question around. Why is it so that people is so? I'll tell you one thing is I didn't expect it that, you know, that it really had such a big impact on people, you know, starting out in Denmark, and who know, it came as a surprise to me. I was no doubt about that everything was true and had a lot of emotions of around our main character, and I totally, you know, was fond of the film and I loved it, but I didn't really knew that it had that fantastic impact. All I knew that when we were working at it, that we were trying to tell as true story as possible, true in the sense that it's emotional true that people could reflect on. So my conclusion to it is that when you are true to yourself, when you are true to the characters that you are, and when you are true in the building of the story, that you don't try to manipulate the audience, that you don't try to make fancy scenes or things like that, but that you just simply slowly, in the slow pace, open up the life of the character. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that answered your question.
No, that absolutely does. I mean, I think you sort of hit the nail on the head right there in terms of saying, I mean, you're telling a very true story. Like there's no sort of, you aren't holding anything back from any sort of parts of his life. And he's answering to the best of his ability in terms of what he can remember, what he wants to remember. I mean, it's a hard thing to battle those types of things, because I think at one point he says on that before they go into the forest to get onto the boat, he says, I only really have two memories from that evening. So, I mean,
he's being very, it's not like it's a very like there's so much going on, but he's remembering these two very important sections of that, and the importance of those sections come through and really translate very well to the audience. Because I mean, if you added in, I guess, like fluff or extra space, like it wouldn't resonate as much. So I think the fact that it is that nice sort of slow paced introduction into him and into his life and into the trials and tribulations that he's gone through, I really think it just evolves into this sort of beautiful ending that just, like I said at the beginning, just gives you optimism and hope that there is something better on the other side of this all. I think you answered the question beautifully.
I think that I think you're right. You know, what do you remember? You remember certain things, and especially one little scene that I really like is that in Russia, when they are picked up by the police, and together with some others, and also a young girl, and the policeman there, you know, having certain idea of what they could do to her, and where the grown up lying on the couch, grown up, I mean, in the beginning of his 30s, reflect on it, and is so angry with himself. How could I do that? How could I just let her be there just by herself? Why didn't I do anything? That anger of an understanding of what it was to be teen in Moscow, and what he could have done different. Mm-hmm. I think that reflection is something which I really liked. Mm-hmm. Because that was what he remembered.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the whole idea of actually telling that story, is that he wanted to tell Jonas about that pain that he was carrying even as a grown-up. Mm-hmm.
Thank you all for listening. This episode was edited and produced by me, Jackson Vickery. Graphics were done by Dylan Michael, and the opening and closing theme were done by Sterling Gavinsky.